Welcome to Innovative Legal Leadership, the podcast where you'll hear from the world's most innovative general counsel and their leadership teams for their insights into the running of a Fortune 500 in-house legal department. The challenges, the wins, the roadblocks, the journey to date, and most importantly, what lies ahead. Let's get into the show.
Welcome to Innovative Legal Leadership, the podcast that delves into the fascinating world of innovative in-house legal teams and pioneers in the field of legal leadership. I'm your host, Cynthia Loren, and today we're excited to have Ben Adams with us, a notable leader known for his pivotal role in guiding businesses through growth, international expansion, and legal complexities. His career highlights also include significant tenures at PayPal, Microsoft, and Nokia, highlighting his skill in spearheading transformative initiatives and driving growth for leading companies. Ben, it's a pleasure to have you with us. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Cynthia. Very nice to be here.
Excellent. Ben, let's dive straight in. Throughout your legal career, which is pretty distinguished, you've held some heavy-hitting roles at notable companies before arriving at Western Union. Can you kind of talk us through the journey to Western Union and then perhaps tell us about some of the experiences that have shaped your path to the role that you do right now?
Leading up to this, it actually caused me to reflect on the fact that I've been at this for 3 decades, 30 years since sort of in my professional life to some degree or fashion. And I can think of that as bucket it and two real camps. In the first 2 decades, I would characterize as a door opened and I walked through it. So whether that was, pre-legal, I spent 3 years in the Peace Corps in Cameroon, Central Africa. Post that, when I decided to go to law school, ended up basically being a paralegal with Fisher Richardson. They put me through law school, work days, went to Georgetown at night. Obviously, an incredibly busy period, but incredibly rewarding as well. Post-law school, again, sort of ended up at Gibson Dunn, maybe more of a traditional path coming out of Georgetown, Gibson Dunn's Washington, D.C. office, but then very quickly pivoted. They offered an opportunity for me to go to London. We spent 3 years in London and then landed back in New York. So again, just, sort of a door would open and I would had the courage, I think, in some ways to walk through it. And then equally so, or even more importantly, I had a life partner who had as much courage or more than I did and was willing to kind of say yes to these things and join me on that journey. So really an amazing period. When I left private practice, I joined Nokia and that sort of trend continued to some degree. With Nokia, I started briefly in New York, and then soon we were in Finland. After that, we were in India, and then we ended up in California. Each of those sort of roles of varying progression, seniority, breadth, and again, opportunities to kind of learn, grow, and expand, which was really important to me. So really, again, very interesting to me, kind of that 1993 to 2013 period where it didn't feel like a plan, but in hindsight, it kind of looked like a plan where I was gaining horizontal experience, gaining some vertical growth, breadth, depth in terms of the different fields that I was supporting, the kind of work I was doing, the cultures I was able to operate in, and really enjoyed that period. Post 2013, got acquired by Microsoft when we left Nokia, and then probably, whether I call it more traditional, but it feels like a slightly more traditional path for the next decade, where I ended up spending about 7 years at PayPal, really in a similar level role in terms of kind of VP, Deputy General Counsel, but really touching all aspects of the business. So having the chance to do everything from corporate M&A and strategy to running global business legal teams, which covered all the commercial and regulatory aspects of their operations, being the chief product counsel, as well as running IP, and then ending my time there as the chief commercial counsel before joining Western Union. And, and again, as I'm coaching people, thinking about their careers, yes, I had that sort of same title, same level during those 7 years, but amassing a broad array of knowledge, a broad array of experiences, whether that was in financial services, payments regulation, regulatory, just, you know, doing business in different markets that I hadn't operated in with any, you know, degree of specificity, and just gaining experience that sort of continues to set you up for that next thing. And then that next thing for me was my first public company general counsel role, which I've now been here at Western Union for a little under 2 years. Again, a story of opportunity. So, you know, less than 2 years, but in that time, in addition to being the chief legal officer and running everything that entails in a, you know, global financial services company, I also had the chance to become the chair of our Western Union Foundation within sort of 3 months of arrival. Within 9 months of arrival, I was asked to step in and be the interim chief people officer for better part of nine months. And then even just recently, I was asked to lead one of our strategic pillars from more of a business and operational standpoint. So the, you know, one thing that I always coach people on is be ready for anything. I think, you know, be ready that change is constant. Look for that horizontal growth, not just the vertical growth.
Wonderful answer to a really important question. I mean, I think, first of all, your candor as to the reasons for some of the movements I find fascinating. And I want to dig into that a little bit. Before I get there, though, for those of our audience who don't, I mean, I imagine most people know what Western Union does. I certainly do because I use it and have done since being a teenager, sending money home, etc. But can you tell the audience what Western Union does? And you touched a bit on the mission. So, you know, what is its mission?
Yeah. So core business is cross-border remittance. So how do you send money from country A to country B? Oftentimes, our customer base will be, you know, a migrant worker, say, sending money from the U.S. back to Mexico. Other corridors that are really important for us would be, you know, the Philippines is a really important receive market. Mm-hmm. The Philippines sends literally tens of thousands of workers abroad every year, and I think 9% of their GDP is based on remittance. So we play a significant part of getting money back to the Philippines and supporting not just the worker who's sending money from Europe, the U.S., wherever it might be, but also getting money back to the families that they're supporting on the ground in places like the Philippines.
So, I mean, given the journey that you just outlined from the start up to now in Western Union, I've picked up a couple of things in terms of, you know, being uncomfortable with being uncomfortable has certainly been a theme. The international aspect, complexity of transactions, et cetera. I'm curious, what is it that motivates you as a GC? So those are perhaps some of the things that have motivated, you know, your movements in terms of career. But as a GC functioning in your role, what is it that really drives you? What are your core values?
Yeah, I'd say what gets me out of bed every day, and it's interesting, I've got time with my CEO tomorrow to talk about this in terms of how do I drive impact, right? So how do I both, you know, create empowered and accountable teams? So how do I do that within kind of my broader domain, as well as how do I do that personally? And if I think about even just in the 2 years that I've been here at Western Union, 3 months in, we went through some changes. And as a result, I had the chance to become the chair of our Western Union Foundation. This is an organization that, you know, has a small handful of employees, but we distribute a little over, you know, close to about $4.5 million every year. We put that to work. Our current mission is dubbed Prosperity Beyond Borders, and we're trying to drive $500 million in aggregate wage gains for people who've crossed borders over the next 3 years through education, skills-based training, things like that. That was something I didn't come in knowing I would get, but frankly, as soon as the opportunity presented itself, I dove on it. And again, for me, it's that personal impact. It's that personal excitement of jumping into something a little bit new and different and fresh. About 6 months after that, about a year ago right now, our chief people officer left. So I spent 8 months as the interim chief people officer leading, you know, a 300-person HR organization, never having been an HR professional. I went into that with a mindset that I only know so much, and I've got to, you know, trust the leaders that I have and really listen more than speak. But again, a super personally very impactful and very motivated by the challenge of driving impact within the organization by virtue of my role. So as I step back and, you know, think about your question, I'm still one who gets excited by every day looking a little bit different. And the beauty of, you know, even just my core job as the chief legal officer, you know, we have operations in some form or fashion in over 200 countries. Every day has a little spice of something different as a result. Sure. So I really appreciate that. And then probably if I think about what I'm most proud about as a leader is really focusing on how do I drive empowerment and accountability and mm-hmm. think about, you know, really focus on, I spend a lot of time thinking about talking to my teams and thinking about how do we create clarity on, you know, who's accountable, who's on first, who's responsible for something, who's supporting on things. And even just in the, you know, probably my first year in the organization here, if I think about how we were able to pivot from, you know, it's still a team sport. It's always going to be many. Very rarely is it few. But making sure when we have many, we're clear on who's doing what, who owns it, who's supporting, who's driving, really was a real focus for that first year.
How has the role of a GC or CLO changed in the time that you've kind of been on this journey? I guess there's two parts to my question. First of all, have you seen the role transform? And then what do you see as being on the horizon, you know, given just the evolution in the in-house legal function?
Yeah, so sure. And I don't think any of this is new or news. And I've had the benefit of seeing the evolution in real time in some ways, right? Because I think I would argue, and people may differ with me, I would argue the modern general counsel kind of had its foundations in the US. So mm-hmm. of a, you know, true chief legal officer who's has a broader remit, looks across more than just legal and doesn't only show up in the room as a kind of advisor. When I was practicing in Europe in, you know, early 2000s, that was, I think, really forming in the US and taking shape in a way that it maybe wasn't 100% there yet in Europe. And as I was doing deals there, you would still find general counsel who were more of the traditional corporate secretary type, playing a more of a, again, consultant advisor type role, but not, you know, consigliere type role to executive management and the board. As I sort of at least have watched over the last 20 years, I feel like, you know, the modern day, you know, at least sort of US style general counsel has really taken root even globally. I was in Dubai last week meeting, and I met, you know, some, at least a couple of chief legal officers of some other companies. And you certainly saw it there. I was in Singapore the week before. You see it there. I know for, you know, it's certainly taken root across Europe. So to me, it's that, you know, much, much broader. How do I think about the risks of the organization as a whole? And what I always say to my team is, you know, sort of your legal degree gets you in the room. Your business acumen keeps you in the room. So getting comfortable speaking on things that may not necessarily be just legal topics, right? Recognizing that in some ways, legal has a inherent superpower and advantage in these large multinational organizations because we are, you know, my team's 100 people, right? Yeah. And I can see across this, you know, 200 country business with closer to, you know, 9,000 employees. And, you know, it's typically 1 or 2 degrees of separation for me to find someone who knows about any issue within our organization. Whereas oftentimes for the business, it may be 5, 6, 7, and they can't even, you know, find those connections. So to me, you know, had a legal as a true problem solver, legal as a true trusted partner for the business, is at least where we are today. You know, you ask a much harder question, and I probably have less to add on this one, but would love to have, you know, have a conversation with you around it, which is, what is the future state of the general counsel or chief legal officer? My sense is it's just going to, you know, continue to grow and expand to a degree, but I do think it has to have, I do think there's some natural limitations and barriers there, which is, you know, at some point, you know, I think you become, you know, I think about myself, I'm sort of like a multi-sport athlete who can really step into almost any problem that faces the company. And part of that is training. Part of that is, again, that awareness and knowledge that you build up of the organization. But I also think you've got to be, you know, reflective and intentional around how much do you take on as well. And when are you stepping into, you know, areas where, and I say this a lot to my, you know, my team and my business partners, subject matter expertise matters. There's times where just simply good leadership probably isn't enough. And that was something, you know, when I was talking to my CEO, when I was the interim chief people officer, he said to me, "Hey, you really seem to enjoy this. Would you be interested in keeping this role?" And I said, you know, it's something I've been wrestling with, because it actually, between the chief legal officer role and the chief people officer role, it actually really set me up to be that true consigliere for the CEO, because there was nothing that was taboo or off limits.
Yeah.
And I said, as much as I think it would benefit me, I would be motivated by it and perhaps benefit personally, I'm not sure it's the right thing for the organization, because we're on, you know, our people team is on a pretty radical transformation that's going to help drive, you know, the transformation that the organization as a whole is on. And I said, I feel like this is one where we have to honor subject matter expertise and get a leader in here who really has seen it and done it in multiple forums, multiple size organizations, with, you know, kind of different needs, and knows what levers to pull in a way that, frankly, I just won't. So one thing I would say is the risk of the modern day general counsel is you can find yourself kind of stepping into almost anything. But I do think we need to be intentional around what is temporary, what is permanent.
Yeah.
How do you truly, at the end of the day, which is, you know, really drives every decision I make, how do you think end to end for the organization and basically take on the problems and the opportunities that are truly the best for the organization for you to, you know, for you to address and execute on?
I had a guest on, I think, latter part of last year, who has actually now taken, I'm not sure if she had the role of chief people officer at the time, but she's definitely now chief legal officer, chief people officer, and it's a combined permanent role. Her view is very much that, you know, well, actually, it's not so much about her view. It's just sort of the debate and discussion around whether that's the right thing. Just the sort of conversation that we're having now about, you know, should this be about subject matter expertise, or are there other things? You know, the role of GC CLO can expand so broadly. I mean, I think it's the natural direction of travel that the role grows, given, you know, given what it is that we as lawyers bring to the table. But absolutely, there have to be clear parameters as to when that becomes too much. And I think it will be different in each organization, ultimately.
There's no one-size-fits-all approach to this, and I 100% agree with you. For us, it was the right thing for 10 months in, you know, 2023.
Yeah.
For my last company, you know, our CLO was the chief people officer for the better part of 3 or 4 years. And it worked pretty well. So again, different companies will have different flavors and different needs at different points in time. So, and it will play, you know, I could probably, you know, if I think about other areas that I could step into, you know, corp dev or corporate strategy, something like that, just based on my background, which might be a good fit for me, but may not be a great fit for someone else based on their background or experience. So.
Just on that, I'm curious, while I have you in the hot seat, to find out whether you have a view around job titles. So I know, you know, there's been a big debate, particularly in the US, around, you know, is it GC or is it CLO? Do you have a view? I know your title now, Chief Legal Officer. Do you have a view what it should be and whether it matters?
Yeah, we've just recently going through sort of a titling exercise within my organization, because I think it's important just to understand really how to think about people who are peer-to-peer comparisons, right? And understanding who's at the same level and making sure that you're, you know, when you are thinking about, you know, performance and rewards and outcomes, making sure that you're measuring people against, you know, a consistent yardstick. So to me, that's somewhat useful. Outside of that, frankly, at any level of my career, I have not limited myself based on my title or limited myself based on, felt like I was limited based on how I could interact with, you know, peers, superiors, whatnot, just by virtue of what the title was. On the specific question of chief legal officer versus general counsel, I think everybody's a chief these days. So having the general counsel fall into that bucket, I think is useful. More just in terms of perhaps sending the message to the broader organization of parity to some degree, with the chief operating officer, with the chief product officer, with the chief enterprise risk officer, things of that nature, chief people officer, right? Yeah. So I think it's sort of the flavor of the day, but I do think there's, and you're starting to see more and more because of the expanded remit of the chief legal officer, you're starting to see more two-tier structures where you may also have a general counsel under the chief legal officer, which I think helps to add some clarity as well.
So. Yeah, for sure. Let's talk a bit about your team at Western Union. So I know that you have quite an interesting composition within the team. I would love to kind of understand a bit more about that and also just get your take on achieving work-life balance. So one of the things that Pursuit drives for is, you know, killing the billable hour, as we like to refer to it. You know, how does all of that play into how you view your team, how you lead the team at Western Union?
Yeah. So, you know, and this is probably going back really to my law firm days, which is, you know, we are very lucky to be in a profession, right? I mean, and as a result, I treat people like professionals. So, you know, even long before hybrid work models or, you know, things of that nature, we've had the ability to, I think legal departments in general have had a probably greater ability to work in a hybrid manner because of that professional nature. So, so one, I would say that's kind of my coming in mindset, which is, I expect my team to show up. I expect my team to sort of, once they know what they're accountable for delivering, to deliver. And I typically don't have to micromanage. And as I think about sort of my leadership and my team, they, as a whole, they embody that, which I really value and appreciate. You know, when I came in to Western Union, and this is probably consistent kind of with my ethos, which is, you know, we did a pretty sizable reorganization, and the real focus there was basically driving clarity of ownership. So we had a number of, what I inherited had a number of overlapping activities, and we will, as I said, we're always going to have to work in a team sport, but we're not necessarily, you know, we shouldn't be set up in a way that drives lack of clarity around ownership of issues. And that was a little bit how we were structured. So we went back to kind of some of the basics there. The other thing we did was I had some things that were consolidated under certain folks, and partly because my predecessor had at the time had compliance and legal, I think I was able to expand my remit a bit. So basically go from, you know, 4 direct reports on the legal side to 8 to 9, which, you know, at least for me, drove a lot more transparency, drove a lot more engagement on issues around litigation, around employment matters, ethics, things like that, that, you know, public policy that I hadn't necessarily been seeing before. And again, that may not have been right in the past structure because of the sort of having a 1800 person compliance organization as part of the group. But in at least the structure that I inherited, I felt like that has been right and has proven out right. The other thing that you said was around, kind of the death of the billable hour and you know, how I think about sort of wellness and, you know, sort of balance. I do think, you know, again, different people can get different, can deliver the same result with different amount of work, right? So for some folks, it takes more, some folks, it takes less. Some people are night owls, some people are morning birds. I personally am a night owl. That's how I'm wired. And though I have a job that seems to think that I'm a morning early riser, so I tend to get it on both ends a little bit. But, you know, again, comes back to really that idea of creating an empowered workforce who has clarity on what they need to deliver and able to get it done. On the wellness piece, it's interesting. It's something I talk about less here. At my prior company, wellness was actually one of our values. And it also felt like at the time, it was a culture that could kind of eat you up if you let it. So for me, that's, you know, I know what makes me tick. I don't necessarily, you know, I get so much cerebral engagement on the job that I probably spend a lot less time. I probably read more books in my 20s than I've read in my 50s so far, but it doesn't mean I'm not passionate about reading. It's just, I find I get a lot more cerebral engagement through my work and the work topics that I'm addressing. So therefore, outside of that, when I'm thinking about wellness, for me, it's usually physical outlets and cardio and yoga from just a kind of a mental balance as well. And I can truly tell you, you know, one of my passions is biking. And you can't, if I have a rock that I have to crack and, you know, a problem that I'm really struggling with, rarely do I struggle to find the solution after sitting on my bike for, you know, 2 or 3 hours. Yeah. On a road bike and frankly, clearing your head and allowing your mind to free associate. And what seemed like an insurmountable issue suddenly, you know, tends to have a very clear path.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. And I think, you know, it's interesting that you reference COVID, because I think for many of us, the turning point was just that opportunity to really focus on what matters and just finding a way of working that we can kind of, just have a much more sustainable approach, because I think it is so important. Yeah. You can love your work. You know, I'm incredibly passionate about what I do, but the same thing, I also love biking. And once I get out on the road, it clears my mind. And then I find actually I've got a million and one ideas that I didn't have before I sat on this bike. So completely. Yeah, resonate.
Absolutely. When I took the Western Union job in June of 22, for the first 3 months, I actually engaged a coach. Mm-hmm. Specifically on the wellness aspect, because my worry was coming in, you know, first time public company general counsel with a very robust mission ahead of us. My biggest worry was I was going to regress too far. Now, you know, 2 years on, I put on 10 pounds. I've generally held true to that.
And it's all muscle.
Like, yeah. From a cardio standpoint and otherwise, and just a mental health standpoint.
Yeah,
I feel like I've at least delivered on what I was hoping to deliver.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear. I was going to just ask you, in terms of kind of developing a culture of transparency within the team, what role do you think technology plays? And not just sort of in terms of your internal team management, but also your outside counsel, because obviously that's something that we're really focused on and championing that idea of transparency. So for you, what role does tech play in all of that?
Yeah. So certainly, I mean, at its easiest, things like Slack or Teams or, you know, chat forums. And again, I have a team of 100 plus people, but it's probably even more important to break down some of those barriers with larger teams. But, you know, what I have tried to introduce is kind of in some ways more informality in the conversations. And as a lawyer, you may, you know, sort of bristle at that. But, you know, using our Teams channels, even just our, you know, legal Teams channel to, you know, share little wins. We haven't gotten as far here as at my last organization where we shared more of our challenges. Right. My last organization, we had better use of Slack to frankly just, if you couldn't find an answer, there was a legal Slack channel that you'd go to just try to run things down. Mm-hmm. We haven't quite gotten there here. People still use email for more of that and kind of informal networks as opposed to the broad network. Mm-hmm. But perhaps that's because we are a little bit smaller and it's you typically at least know which direction to turn. Whereas sometimes in a slightly larger organization, you really are just kind of throwing it out to the wind to see who's ever experienced that issue or been able to address that before. Broader technology standpoint, obviously, I think I read something this weekend that was quite interesting commentary this weekend, which was that AI isn't going to, I forget the exact terminology, but basically it wasn't that AI isn't going to rule the world, but
In fact, people who use AI will rule the world.
Yeah.
So I think, I think about artificial intelligence and how do we bring that to bear. We are, looking for different opportunities to bring, both in our core business within the legal team and legal function. How do we take a measured approach? How do we make sure that just like we run our, if we have new initiatives, we run them through privacy guidelines or InfoSec and cybersecurity guidelines, we're doing the same thing for artificial intelligence as well. But that's an area where I think we'll continue to invest in and kind of double down and really, think about it in a way that how does it make our lives more efficient, more effective, and help us drive better outcomes in a quicker fashion. And then with outside counsel, I think there's still, there's certainly ways for outside counsel, whether it's AI, whether it's other tools to increase their effectiveness and increase, frankly, our return on investment for, what is increasingly a very significant part of our cost base and our external expenditure is, my biggest single line item is my external outside counsel budget beyond, salary and benefit for my internal team. So thinking about, working with law firms who are really thinking about how do they drive efficiency? How do they take, some of the more mundane work out of their process through technology, through outsourcing, things of that nature, and drive more efficiencies to justify what seems to be ever increasing cost structures.
Yeah, no, for sure. And just on the AI point, what's informing your learning? How important is it to engage in discussion with other GCs, for example, or is it really just about what you are seeing across the industry? How are you kind of figuring out what direction Western is going in, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I'd say we, with most issues, because we're in financial services, because we have a deeper rigor around some of the things that we're doing, I'd say it naturally puts us a little bit into a fast follower model, which I'm pretty comfortable with. So I'd say there's not a ton that we're doing that's a issue of true first impression, but oftentimes we're keeping an eye on the landscape, keeping an eye on the market. And it can be as simple as how do we do, marketing translations more cost effective and efficient and frankly, with better outcomes? How do we think about our customer operations teams? And, today we take a small sampling and a limited number of languages of understanding how each call goes between the customer and the agent. How do we get to 100% of those across multiple languages? Artificial intelligence is a powerful tool in doing things like that. I'd say there's probably less that we're inventing as an issue of first impression, but certainly watching the space and trying to figure out what can we adapt and how quickly can we adapt it, and then just being obviously conscious of the unintended consequences as well.
Yeah, sure. Ben, I know I've kept you quite long. I want to just ask you one more question before I let you out of the hot seat. If you could give some advice to 25-year-old Ben, what would you say? Or what would you do differently?
25-year-old Ben. So 25-year-old Ben was sitting in a Y Cameroon in a house with a tin roof and dirt floors. I don't know what he was thinking of at the time, but he probably had a James Michener novel in front of him and was back to my days of, I did a lot of reading when I was in my 20s. I would actually, in some ways, I would say don't do anything different. Because I would not want to color, the beauty of youth, and I love this when I kind of mentor and counsel folks, is you have a confident, a sophomore confidence and a willingness to do things that you have no right to do or even try. No. And I would worry that if I in any way, shape, or form tried to guide that 25-year-old Ben to a different outcome. Because again, there's not a misstep that I wouldn't take over. There's not a right step that I wouldn't take over. And we are all a accumulation of our life experiences. And the missteps were as important as the better outcome steps. And, the journey has been, the joy of it. So I would actually other than maybe when I was in 2000, I was doing a lot of work for Amazon and they were on the verge of bankruptcy. And I never, ever, ever once bought any Amazon stock. So I might tell Ben, hey, when you get to that point, when you're doing some work for Amazon, despite how bleak it looks for them, it's probably worth buying a few dollars worth. So I might encourage that. But otherwise, I'd say have at it, have fun, keep a smile on your face, keep going. And there'll be some down days, but there'll be more up days than down days. So I'll leave it at that.
Great advice. Ben, thank you so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed this discussion with you. I really appreciate all your insights and experiences. And yeah, wish you continued success in the journey ahead. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we continue every day. We learn a little bit more, right? So thank you, Cynthia. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning into the show. For more, please subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. If you or someone you know would make a great guest on the show, please connect with me, Jim, the host of the show, via email, jim@pursuit.com. We'd love to hear from you.